parts of the government are shut down today as Congress and the White House fight over the budget. I'm Bob Edwards. Today is Tuesday, November 14th, and this is NPR's Morning Edition. President Clinton and congressional leaders continue their budget negotiations today. Secretary of State Christopher joins the Balkan peace talks today in Dayton on his way to a Pacific summit in Japan. China's President Jiang Zemin is visiting South Korea today. On his 47th birthday, Britain's Prince Charles is visiting Germany. UN Secretary General Boutros Boutros-Ghali is at the European Parliament today, and it's his birthday too. Boutros-Ghali is 73 years old. The news is next.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Jean Cochran. Hundreds of thousands of federal workers showed up for jobs this morning and then were sent home because of the budget deadlock between President Clinton and the Republican Congress. It has forced much of the government to shut down, including the parks and monuments.
Due to the closure of all government facilities, all monuments, memorials, and visitor services will be closed to the public until further notice. The White House and the White House Visitor Center is also closed.
President Clinton last night vetoed the continuing resolution that would have averted a shutdown. In a letter to Congress explaining his action, he pointed out the bill would raise Medicare premiums and deeply cut education and environmental protections. He said those conditions are not necessary to meet his goal of balancing the budget. He's asking for a clean continuing resolution, one with no extraneous conditions. Neither side made a move toward compromise in a meeting last night. They will try again this morning when Chief of Staff Leon Panetta and Budget Director Alice Rivlin meet with House Budget Chairman John Kasich and Senate Budget Chief Pete Domenici.
This is Morning Edition. I'm Bob Edwards. The White House has ordered hundreds of thousands of federal employees who reported for work this morning to go back home because the government no longer has the legal authority to pay them. Late last night, President Clinton vetoed a temporary spending bill that would have averted the shutdown, but in his view, would have raised Medicare premiums. The White House also said it would have cut spending too much. Minutes after the veto, the president met with House and Senate Republican leaders. The discussions at the White House produced only an agreement to meet again. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports.
Congressional Republicans emerged from an 11th-hour meeting with the president just moments before the midnight deadline to announce that no agreement had been reached. But Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole said the fact that the two sides were even talking was progress.
We had a very constructive meeting. We've been in there for an hour and 40 minutes. Went around and around, but we don't have an agreement. The first thing that will happen tomorrow morning will be a meeting with the Chief of Staff, Leon Panetta, with John Kasich, Pete Domenici, and us, with Alice Rivlin, too, probably. Yeah. See if they can find some formula.
Democrats sounded much more pessimistic. Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle said this can't go on, and House Democratic Leader Richard Gebhardt noted that the Republicans had rejected a suggestion that they simply keep the government going for another 48 hours.
I think we've got some tough problems to solve here. This could last for a while. Again, I don't think it's appropriate. I don't think it's legitimate. I think it's irresponsible. A lot of innocent people will be hurt as a result of what happens in the next days. But right now, I can't tell you when I think this will be resolved. It may not be resolved for a number of days, and maybe beyond that.
The late-night meeting at the White House capped a long day in which partisan finger-pointing seemed gradually to give way to a desire to talk. Yesterday morning, Senate Majority Whip Trent Lott said there was only one reason President Clinton had already vetoed a bill raising the debt limit and was certain to veto a stopgap funding bill.
I think the president wants to veto everything. That's his plan. Once he vetoes it and gets all the political points he can out of it, and then if he sees it's really going to start hurting, he'll quickly start talking seriously about what maybe can be worked out.
As the day wore on, however, some looked for a way out. Senate Budget Chairman Pete Domenici floated a proposal to address White House concerns about the GOP plan to raise Medicare premiums, but he got little support. Lawmakers increasingly warned that the days of feuding and blaming each other had simply aroused public anger at everyone involved in the mess. That was House Speaker Newt Gingrich's assessment.
I think they'll blame all of us. I think the American people expect us to be able to act like adults, to get in a room and talk in a civil manner, and to get something accomplished.
Louisiana Democratic Senator John Breaux said as far as his constituents were concerned, the non-essential federal employees being told to stop working should include members of Congress. Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts noted that the employees facing an uncertain work week were going to get paid eventually, which would make it difficult for GOP freshmen to go home and boast that they were so serious about balancing the budget that they brought the government to a halt to make their point.
I mean, this is the most extraordinary fakery I've ever heard in my life. We're going to shut down the government, but we're not going to shut down the government. People are still going to get paid. In effect, Mr. President, this is going to cost the American people more money. And the farce of it is the revolution is paying people not to do their job. Boy, that's a heck of a change in Washington, D.C.
Change is exactly what Republicans say they intend to bring to Washington, D.C. And they say to do it, they have to force the administration to focus on their bottom line, a zero federal deficit on their timetable using their preferred economic assumptions. Senator Lott says Congress can go back and pass new versions of both the debt limit and the stopgap funding bill.
But let me emphasize again, Republicans are not going to vote to give the president a continuing resolution to keep his profligate spending ways going on and a debt ceiling increase without his involvement and agreement to a seven-year Congressional Budget Office confirmed balanced budget.
Federal workers will be paying close attention to what, if any, progress is made today. And lawmakers say, judging by the messages they're getting from home, quite a few other voters are watching as well. I'm Peter Kenyon at the Capitol.
Government employees who would be furloughed face the prospect of delayed paychecks right before the holidays, work piling up in their absence, and the impact to morale of being told that the government can get along without them. Some of them threaten to challenge the distinction under which some people would be sent home and others told to stay on the job. NPR's Philip Davis reports.
Around the country today, hundreds of thousands of federal employees are confronting the fact that jobs that they have labored over and sometimes loved are considered non-essential. Dorothy Vernon helps manage the federal workforce for the Office of Personnel Management. Her job is considered non-essential. And so today, for the fifth time since 1981, the longtime employee is planning to take the bus from her home in Southern Maryland to Washington, report to work, and wait for her superiors to tell her the government is shutting down and she will be sent home.
Everybody's so tired of it. There's something wrong that every year the system can't work. And there are a lot of people I work with who live from paycheck to paycheck who don't know what they're going to do if they miss the whole paycheck. It's never pleasant, but this seems to really be hitting people harder than in the past.
At the National Park Service, one of the nation's most popular agencies, 17,500 employees out of 20,000 total are to be told today to go home if no budget deal is reached. They're non-essential, too. But park spokesman David Barna says without these non-essential employees, national parks and monuments will be closed and will stay that way until the employees come back.
Things like the Washington Monument, Statue of Liberty, Alcatraz Island, Independence Hall, the White House tours, caves and caverns across the West, numerous historic homes like the Harry Truman Home, the Frederick Douglass Home here in D.C., Arlington House up here in the middle of Arlington Cemetery, and it includes visitor centers coast to coast at all of our major parks throughout the country. The plan today is that for as best we can, we will close entrances to those parks and deny new visitors access into those areas.
Thus disrupting plans for hundreds of thousands of ordinary citizens who likely thought their vacation plans were absolutely essential. Now, some workers are considered so essential that even if the government shuts down, they're supposed to stay on the job. They include members of the armed forces and other security agencies, or workers who deal with pressing health issues, such as inspections of meat and vegetables for contaminations or spoilage, and employees who help guarantee our safety, such as air traffic controllers. But the definition of essential has become so broad that it applies to fully 60% of the federal workforce. That, some say, makes it easier for politicians to threaten to close down the government if their demands aren't met, since so many will stay on the job. And John Sturtevant, the head of the American Federation of Government Employees, says many of the rest are just as needed.
If you turn 65 tomorrow and you want to apply for Social Security benefits, you will not be able to. If your mother or your grandmother wants to report a lost and stolen Social Security check, she would not be able to. If your uncle is a veteran and wants to apply for benefits, they would not be able to because these places would be shut down. We think that that's essential.
Not only is the public being adversely affected, Sturtevant says, the government could lose as much as several hundred million dollars in salary reimbursement to these so-called non-essential workers when they return. So the Federal Employees Union is planning to sue, arguing that if the government shuts down, all employees should be kept on the job or all should be sent home, since almost all of them, according to Sturtevant, are essential. He hopes the specter of court intervention will be enough to get the executive and legislative branches to stop their squabbling, do their jobs, and pass the remaining spending bills.
Good morning, I'm Jean Cochran with these headlines. Having failed to reach a last-minute compromise on budget priorities last night, Congress and the White House will try again today. Meanwhile, the government is shutting down with some 800,000 non-essential workers being sent home. One out of four diplomats will remain on the job, including those at the Bosnian peace talks in Ohio. Secretary of State Warren Christopher pays a visit today, hoping to nudge the parties closer to a comprehensive peace agreement.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Doreen McAllister. The Clinton administration has ordered the federal government to shut down because of the budget deadlock with Congress. The shutdown affects some 800,000 workers in what are considered non-essential areas of the government. NPR's Mara Liasson reports.
Budget Director Alice Rivlin had already drawn up a plan for an orderly shutdown of the government. Today, she issued a directive to the heads of all cabinet agencies and departments, telling them to close down all non-essential operations promptly and in an orderly manner. By noon, the process should be complete. All essential employees who remain on the job will not receive paychecks until after the crisis is over. Furloughed employees, estimated at around 800,000, may or may not be reimbursed for the pay they lost, depending on what Congress finally resolves. Today, the White House Chief of Staff and the Budget Director are holding talks with the bipartisan leadership of the Congressional Budget Committees to see if they can find a way out of the impasse. At the White House, the staff will be reduced from 430 to 90. The household staff, the butlers, gardeners, and cooks who serve the first family, will be reduced from 70 to 7. At the White House, I'm Mara Liasson.
Corporate America could see a windfall from the expected government shutdown. That's because of the Securities and Exchange Commission has to cut the fee it charges companies to register their stocks and bonds. Congress hasn't passed the agency's 1996 budget, which it allows it to continue charging a higher fee. The last time this happened, the Treasury lost about $20 million.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Jean Cochran. The federal government shutdown has occurred, and there's still no sign of compromise between Congress and the president. The Clinton administration today sent home hundreds of thousands of federal employees, a move made necessary by his veto last night of a stopgap funding bill. John Sturtevant of the Federal Government Employees Union says his organization is going to court seeking a temporary restraining order to stop the furloughs.
Even though our union has been preparing for the worst-case scenario since mid-July, this irresponsible action still comes as a shock. By shutting down the government, this Congress has neglected the needs of all Americans.
The last time a budget fight forced a government shutdown was 5 years ago. It occurred on a holiday and lasted only a day. This time, there's no sign that either side is ready to back down from its position. Interviewed on CBS this morning, White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta said the president refuses to accept the Medicare cuts attached to the Republican stopgap funding measure.
The real question is whether they're prepared to back off a little bit. Let us negotiate the budget issue separately, but for goodness sakes, let's not penalize the innocent victims in this country because of their political agenda.
House Majority Leader Dick Armey, interviewed on that same program, said he's discouraged.
The fact of the matter is the president has threatened to veto everything we sent up there. Whether he looks at it or not, he threatens to veto it. And we have got to find some way to make him come to terms with this change that we're coming to, where we're going to balance the budget for the first time in 7 years.
While the government employees head home, Panetta, Budget Director Alice Rivlin, House Budget Chairman John Kasich, and his Senate counterpart Pete Domenici will get to work. They will try to find some common ground for ending the budget stalemate. The real showdown, however, is yet to come. The massive bill bringing the budget into balance by the year 2002 will be the grounds. House and Senate Republican negotiators put the finishing touches on that measure yesterday. It trims taxes by $245 billion, squeezes about $270 billion in savings from Medicare, and overhauls welfare and an array of other federal programs. Republicans plan to push it through Congress later this week. However, President Clinton has vowed to veto it.
The budget impasse will force the Securities and Exchange Commission to slash the fees it charges companies to register their stocks and bonds with the government. The last time this happened, the U.S. Treasury lost about $20 million. The SEC raises millions of dollars by charging companies securities registration fees, currently set at 1/29th of 1% of the total offering amount. Any surplus is passed on to the Treasury Department. Due to the government shutdown, it's expected the SEC will be forced to substantially reduce the fee. The agency is bracing for a new flood of securities registrations under the lower fee. It's possible Congress could pass special legislation keeping the higher fees intact, but the SEC's legislative counsel says he's unaware of any such plans. Representative Edward Markey, a Massachusetts Democrat, expressed outrage at the situation. He says the Republican leadership's reckless budgetary blackmail will free wealthy corporations to launch a midnight raid on the U.S. Treasury by filing huge shelf registrations during the period when SEC fees are temporarily reduced. I'm Greg Peppers in Washington.
This is Morning Edition. I'm Bob Edwards. Each side blames the other, but for some 800,000 federal workers, the outcome is the same. They're being sent home today as the federal government shuts down in a budget dispute between the White House and Congress. Only what are deemed essential government services, matters such as air traffic control and food inspection, will continue. President Clinton and bipartisan leaders of Congress met late last night in the Oval Office, but failed to resolve the impasse. The only progress they made was an agreement that the president's budget director would meet this morning with the Republican chairman of the House and Senate budget committees. NPR's White House correspondent Mara Liasson joins me now. Good morning.
Morning, Bob.
So what happened at last night's meeting?
Well, not much, actually. That meeting followed another day of incredible acrimony. The president vetoed two more temporary spending and borrowing measures after he vetoed the second one, a spending bill that included some Medicare premium hikes. The Republican leaders called the president, asked for a meeting. He agreed. They all trooped down to the White House late last night. And according to participants, the meeting was really not a negotiation at all. Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole said they just went round and round. And the minority leader in the Senate, Senator Daschle, came out of the White House saying, "We made no progress at all." And according to a White House official, after it became clear in the meeting that the president wasn't going to budge on his demand that the Medicare issue be dropped from that stopgap spending measure, the Republicans spent the rest of the time, the meeting took about an hour and 40 minutes, talking about a seven-year balanced budget. And they are apparently offering to discuss dropping the Medicare provision if the president agrees to their plan to get rid of the deficit in 7 years, and so far, he's not.
Any hope for progress now?
Well, the good news is that White House Chief of Staff Leon Panetta, the Budget Director Alice Rivlin, and the Chairman of the Budget Committees are meeting today if they make some progress, if there's a breakthrough. Dolan Gingrich said they'd be happy to come back to the White House again this afternoon, but I think the chances of that are very slim today. This stalemate could last some time. People are predicting several more days. One good sign is that Bob Dole did indicate that they had made some headway, at least in the sense, as he put it, that no one is going to beat each other up. He said, "We know this is serious business." So maybe now the public can see these people actually getting down to business.
Well, how did this happen? Why is government about to shut down?
Well, technically, it's about to shut down because only three of the 13 annual appropriations bills that are necessary to give the government the legal authority to spend money have been signed into law. Now, that isn't new. Other Congresses have failed to complete their work on time. But this year, both sides are dug in. The Republicans are dug in because they want to use the threat of a government shutdown as leverage to get the president to sign on to their balanced budget plans. And this debate over these temporary spending and borrowing bills have really become a dress rehearsal, a stand-in for the much larger battle, the much more politically important battle over the bigger budget bill. And Republicans have not yet sent that bill to the president.
And the president is just as adamant.
The president is just as adamant. This is a defining moment for him, as the White House likes to say. This is a way that he can prove that he is standing firm behind his principles, such as not cutting Medicare, education, or the environment. And polls show that the American people, by about 2-1, think he should veto the Republicans' budget plans. And at least for now, the public appears to be blaming Republicans more for this impasse.
Thank you, Mara. NPR White House correspondent Mara Liasson. As a former director of the Congressional Budget Office, Rudy Penner is quite familiar with the machinations of producing a budget agreement, and he's with me now. Good morning.
Good morning.
This has happened before, furloughs of federal workers, but the shutdowns haven't lasted more than a day or two. Do you expect this one to be about the same?
Well, we can cross our fingers and hope it will. The disagreement looks more serious this time, so for the first time in my career watching the budget, it could last more than a day or two.
Well, if the shutdown were protracted, what would happen?
Well, at first, people would barely notice, I think. But as time goes on, people won't be able to apply for Social Security. They won't be able to apply for food stamps. More and more people will be inconvenienced. And I would think the hostility toward the Congress would just grow and grow.
You expect that the budget dispute might have an impact on the markets or on the economy as a whole?
Well, yesterday the markets didn't look at all nervous. The stock market hit a new record. Interest rates came down. While they aren't nervous, I think they should be, because I do believe this is a very bad sign about reaching a budget agreement eventually. If we can have all this trouble when the Republicans don't even have a full plan on the street yet, I think the prospects for an eventual compromise grow dimmer.
This week, the federal government is due to reach its debt ceiling, the level at which it can no longer borrow money. Secretary of the Treasury Robert Rubin could avoid government default by borrowing from other Treasury funds. But for how long?
Well, it's unambiguous that he has the right to borrow from one of the civil service retirement funds without worry of penalty. He can then turn to the regular civil service retirement fund. There, his rights to borrow get a little more ambiguous. They would probably be challenged in court, but it looks to me like he could get away with borrowing from it for a long time. But if we go so long that you'd have to go to the Social Security Trust Fund or something that has a strong emotional connotation like that, then I think there'd be a real uproar, and that's probably illegal.
Has this ever been done before?
Yes, it's been done on other occasions when the debt limit hasn't passed. Indeed, it was in response to one of those things about 10 years ago that they gave him the legal right to borrow from this one trust fund.
If that kind of accounting went on for very long, what would be the effects?
Well, actually, the trust funds are a bit of a charade. So as long as the Treasury ultimately replaced what it borrowed and paid interest on it, which I'm sure they will, it really wouldn't have any effects.
What happens if the President and Congress don't agree on a budget this year?
Well, they presumably have to agree on the appropriations that keep the ordinary activities of government going. You can't have this shutdown last forever, presumably. The real problem, however, is that if they don't do anything about the entitlements, they'll just go on as they're described in current law, which means that Medicare and Medicaid will continue to grow much faster than our income, and they're at the root of the real deficit problem. So if we don't do anything about them, it seems very unlikely that we'll get this deficit under control. So I would regard that as a very serious situation indeed.
Budget impasses have become common, almost inevitable, when you have one party in control of the White House and the other party in control of Congress. Do past confrontations offer any guide as to how this one will turn out?
Well, I have been assuming they do, in that eventually people find a way to compromise, and I have been fairly optimistic. However, the fact that an impasse occurs so soon in the process, as I said before the Republicans have even finished their plan, I think is a very bad sign. So I'm getting more and more worried about our ability to put this together.
Well, thank you, sir. Rudy Penner is a former director of the Congressional Budget Office.